Now, Steven Soderbergh's latest film, Contagion, released just recently, depicts the series of events that unfold with the outbreak of a new strain of flu. But how do you ensure that films like this are scientifically believable? Well, that's where people like Ian Lipkin, Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Columbia, come in. He was hired to ensure that the scenario portrayed by the film was realistic. I caught up with him to discuss his role on the film set, and before that, what causes new diseases and pandemics to emerge in the first place, and what strategies have been put in place to reduce the risks.
The most important advance in the past few years has been the international health regulations, to which all of the major countries that are represented in the UN have signed on to this. What the international health regulations mandate is that not only is there a requirement for improving health surveillance in your own country, but also supporting the improvements in the developing world as well. So this means that, assuming that we follow this through to its logical conclusion, that we will have high-quality surveillance all over the world, and that people will report in a timely fashion. There are a number of assumptions there, of course, and one is that the resources are available to enable this, and that's not clear right now, and it's become obviously more difficult with the global economic crisis. Nonetheless, there is a firm commitment on the part of the major industrialized nations to make certain that this does come into place.
I suppose it'll be a combination of observing at internal national-wide levels, but also working between countries at an international level to keep an eye on things and track the movement of such a pandemic.
That's correct. And, of course, one of the things that we would like to do would be to prevent or interdict a pandemic by recognizing potential before something moves from animals into the human population. Fully three-quarters of emerging infectious diseases originate in wildlife, and then either move through domestic animals into people or move into people directly. And there are many examples of this: HIV, SARS, influenza virus, West Nile virus. So one of the things we're trying to do is to extend surveillance from the human community into the animal community. So there are a number of efforts that have been led in the UK. Probably the most support has been found through the Wellcome Trust. In the United States, it's USAID. And all these groups are collaborating and trying to support one another in these efforts to identify potential pathogens of humans and animals. Now, sometimes we focus on gorillas and chimpanzees because we think about HIV and Ebola and Marburg and so on. But over the past 4 or 5 years, people have focused on bats. Bats appear to be tolerant to infection with many of these exotic and highly virulent viruses. So examples would be rabies and SARS and Ebola and Marburg. And the bats don't seem themselves to be affected by most of these pathogens. They seem to be able to coexist with them quite happily until somebody eats one of these bats or there's some sort of transfer of infectious material from a bat to a human.
And so once we know more about the potential for animals like bats and other vectors to carry these infections and pass them on, what can we do with that information?
Well, there are several things. First, of course, is you can monitor wildlife for the presence of these infectious agents. They're not all infected, and they're not always infected. And by tracking the movement of these infectious agents in wildlife, you can understand the risk that might be associated with humans. In addition, you can develop specific measures to address these. So people are trying to develop vaccines against many of these agents. There can be drugs which can be developed. And once you know that a particular agent has the potential to move into humans, it becomes a much larger risk, and you're able to focus investment of resources on trying to address those risks. One of the things that we've been trying to do as a field in public health is to try to find ways in which we can streamline the process for creating vaccines for new infectious disease threats. When the pandemic H1N1 influenza virus surfaced in the Americas a couple of years ago, it took us fully 6 months to develop the vaccine, to validate it, to ensure that it was safe and efficacious, and then to begin to distribute it. And using modern molecular techniques, we have the capacity to make many vaccines more rapidly than that. And we're trying to find ways in which the regulatory science can be brought up to speed. By regulatory science, I mean the ways in which you ensure that a vaccine or a drug or an antibody or any other sort of biological intervention is safe and effective. We need to find ways in which we can streamline that process and also, of course, make it less expensive.
So it seems like there's an awful lot of sides to addressing, obviously, something that is an extremely complex problem. There's modelling, looking at potential vectors, there's the sequencing of new viruses that come up. When you were approached to do the film, were you really keen to make sure that it addressed the different sides of a potential pandemic?
Well, to be honest, the most important thing was to figure out whether or not these guys were sincere about making a great film. The screenwriter who approached me initially, Scott C. Burns, you know, was a very serious guy. And he said, look, I want to make something that's real. I want to make something that's important. Obviously, we need to fill theaters. But when we're done with this, we want to feel as though we've made a contribution. So we ran through a series of different scenarios. You know, which viruses were of interest? Where might a virus originate? How would it spread? And you know, I got sucked in, quite frankly, because it was a lot of fun thinking about the ways in which we might be able to convey this message. I think they did a very good job. I mean, there are a couple of points where I think things might have been done a little bit differently, but by and large, the film is accurate and it's timely and it has had an impact, not least in that it's drawn attention to the people who do this kind of work day in and day out, many who don't receive much in the way of accolades for the work that they do, some of whom die in the course of doing this work. But, you know, we try to emphasize the fact that everyone is at risk. You can't hide from infectious diseases, and it's important that everyone be protected. I'm very proud of the film, and it was a great deal of fun to make, I have to say. I didn't anticipate it was going to be as much fun as it was.
That was Professor Ian Lipkin from the University of Columbia discussing the feature film Contagion and how it celebrates the unsung heroes of our public health systems. And you can hear a longer version of that interview at thenakedscientist.com/specials.
Thank you, Sarah. Got a couple of comments on the film. Munya says on our Facebook page, watching the movie is making me paranoid about touching my face. Jason Crocker said, how much is Hollywood and how much is possible? You've seen it, haven't you? What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was great, although I did have to run to the bathroom and wash my hands straight away as soon as it was over.
And our guest this week is John Edmonds from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He'll be back in a few seconds to answer more of your questions that are coming in. But you've seen it, haven't you, John, the film? What did you think?
Yeah, I have. I mean, as an insider, I was struck with, you know, just how well the science was done in the film. I mean, obviously they depict a worst-case scenario, but it's one that actually could happen.
Let's hope not. More from John in just a second.
Distilling the best science. The Naked Scientists.